Let me now introduce all the questions you probably have. Let's keep it for after the second presentation. And let me now introduce Marie Klimeshova from the Charles University in Prague, who will present artistic and political engagement in Czechoslovakia from the 1930s to the 1950s. And Marie Klimeshova, she is a graduate from the art history in the Faculty of Arts at the Charles University in Prague. She worked as a curator in the National Gallery in the Prague City Gallery and the National Gallery in Prague, also as an acting director of the Collection of Modern and Contemporary Art. And she collaborated with the Raven Row Art Exhibition Centre in London. And her publications are also known in Poland, also for your involvement in the research in Czech art of the second half of the 20th century. The publications include Focal Points of Revival, Czech Art from 1956-1963, Years in Days, and Czech Art of 1945-57, and many publications on Czech artists such as Zbinek, Sekal, Bela Kolažová, Jiří Kolaš. Currently, she is a professor at the Department of Art History at the Charles University in Prague. And please, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Mephistopheles' question from the first part of Goethe's Faust, used above as the title for our paper, because my paper was made by me and by my colleague Hanna Rousová, continues as follows. Willst fliegen und bist vom Schwindel nicht sicher? Drangen wir uns dir auf oder du dich uns? You want to fly and are afraid of heights? Did we trust ourselves on you or you in us? Goethe's literary and philosophical take on the medieval myth of Dr. Faust is commonly construed as a modern man's infinite desire for unlimited knowledge. We are going to handle the story of sculpture Ottakar Schwetz as a metaphor of unending, unscrupulous desire for recognition. While Faust fatally breached his agreement with Mephistopheles by his famous exclamation, Verweile doch, du bist so schön, linger, you are so beautiful, Schwetz committed suicide in quiet solitude, leaving no explanatory note. He was only found 2 weeks later. Who was Ottakar Schwetz, a sculptor whose work has not been the theme of any special research-based monograph besides one cine book from 1959, a sculptor whose name was adopted by Czech art history solely due to two sculptures created in the pre-war Czechoslovakia and to one monster piece authoritatively dominating Prague in the 50s. During the Taoist dogmatism stage of the communist rule, his biography is basically as boring as that of many other uninventive artists whose work and life philosophy reflected the bourgeois niveau of the pre-war Czechoslovakia. He was born in 1892, studied the School of Applied Art and then the Academy of Fine Arts in Prague, where he became the disciplined assistant to a significant modernist sculptor of the time, Jan Štúrza. After his premature death, Štúrza committed suicide at the age of 44. He led his specialist studio till 27, but later he didn't become the head of it. In 1920, Schwetz was granted an internship in Paris, as was common at the time, and worked in Émile Antoine Bourdelle's studio. As was also common, he made his living afterwards by creating regional memorials, figural sculptures for banking houses, and portraits. His most prestigious official commission was the allegories of military virtues, fidelity, and devotion for the festive hall of the National Liberation Memorial at Vítkov, Prague, which he made in 38 till 41. Both of the larger-than-life bronze casts are in the lobby of the grave of the unknown soldier at present. Again, as it often happens, Schwed's beginnings seemed promising. His bronze cast, Motorcyclist, Ray of Sunshine, created in 24, was selected by the organizers of the Czechoslovak participation at the Exposition Internationale des Arts Décoratifs et Industriels Modernes in 25 in Paris as an emblem of their concept. They put it close to the rear face of the pavilion, whose design demonstrated how the architect, Josef Gočár, inclined towards the principles of functionalism, albeit just inconsistently at the time. Should we wish to insist on classifying the history of art by the individual isms, as suggested by the main theme of the conference, the motorcyclist reflected the stylization of the new objectivity while lending it a decorative potential precisely corresponding to the ambiguity of the Prague brief, Paris brief. Also, as the sculpture is larger than life, it could serve as a formal model in the construed morphology of decorative object production, ceramics and in particular between the wars. Since late 20s, similar features have characterized not only individual designs of sport trophies, but also ashtrays, merchandising, etc. The hybrid oscillating between modernism and traditionalism, symptomatic for the Paris exposition and subsequently called Art Deco for its likable, often blasphemous attractiveness in the late 60s, was radically rejected as a result of the polemics with modernist canonization and determinism by the international avant-garde in its parallel exposition, L'Art d'Aujourd'hui. Although the motorcyclist could never find a place in the opponent action due to the aforementioned reasons, the broader Czech avant-garde circle adopted it so much that it became an integral part of the Czech modern art history. Schwed's focused on the theme of the 20s optimism, the modern era, movement, speed, motorsports. However, he never became a member of the avant-garde leftist Devětsil Art Federation, which united the youngest generation of artists and poets born about 1900 and open to experiments. It was not just because he was roughly 8 years older. Although he shared their admiration of some attributes of modern civilization, his personality attachment to the bourgeois niveau rendered any participation in the avant-garde's diversionary social discourse impossible. Nevertheless, he apparently loosely collaborated with the Devětsil avant-garde or the liberated theater of Jiří Voskovec and Jan Werich, two comedians with socially critical appeal, most likely on theater stage design. This is a point of his life and creative career what has not been researched in detail. Also, there is an exclusive piece of evidence, should we use the legal terminology. It is Schwed's second entry in the history of art, a thin double portrait of Voskovec and Werich from 32, a polychrome plaster cast with radical, again, rather decoratively reduced shapes. Its Janus style concept, two faces in one mass, was the perfect expression of the famous creative pair's dual unity. As a part of the Devětsil, the liberated theater founded by Voskovec and Werich, together with a few friends in 25, evolved into an important avant-garde center. Among other things, it was famous for its open and brave criticism of the symptoms of growing fascism in the 30s. Both the protagonists emigrated at the last moment and spent the war years in the United States. when the post-war political development in Czechoslovakia took a rapid turn towards a new totality, Jiří Voskovec's unwillingness to adapt to the regime drove him to exile again. Jan Werich, who stayed behind, had a hard time trying to find a way of practicing his art and keeping his moral integrity at the same time. Both totalities affected their lives dramatically. Yet they would not break. They never lowered their high standards of creative work or critical political stances. This is what qualifies them as highly respected and famous personalities in the Czech culture. It is paradoxical that Švec, belonging to the other extreme in the Ten Society, should socialize with Voskovec and Werich. They were the very embodiment of the contrary of what he lived for and what he required of his creative work. And the result? In stark contrast to them, he was of no interest to anyone, even though he was always absolutely indifferent to politics, particularly to the avant-garde leftism. He viewed the communist cope of 48 as an opportunity to finally become visible and to win social recognition. He even dreamed of the state medal. He was 57 and decided to be successful at any price. His entry into the Communist Party on June 48, well after the February communist coup, cannot be judged otherwise. The Stalin cult became his Mephistopheles. What was there to aim for other than to win the competition for Stalin's memorial in Prague, as announced in 49? A lot of thought had gone into his strategy. There were no omissions whatsoever. He published his probably first ever article in the first year of the Visual Arts magazine, published from 1950, a strongly pro-regime text which unscrupulously pronounced his distance from the entire avant-garde art scene. I quote, "In a society aspiring to socialism, the artist no longer lives through mercy of the bourgeoisie and has become a valid member of the great collective of the workers. Listening to the hum and brewing of the times we live in, we will learn that it is impossible to create work far from the understanding of the working masses, as they would be a betrayal of the working class. Therefore, there are no movements that seemed so exciting to artists very often and for a very short term. The path of socialist realism must be followed." The communist ideology's phraseology gave him a tool to settle his personal accounts with those who had overlooked him for decades. But what actually was the situation of those who he considered his potential rivals at the time like? The confusing post-war situation and well-prepared propaganda managed to convince a part of the society initially that voting for communist leaders was the right choice. As it demonstrated by the fates of personalities affected by fascism, like painter Emil Fila, poets František Halas and Jiří Kolář, or the avant-garde foremost leader Karel Taige, who became the targets of destructive criticism after the communist coup in February 48, once again, it was possible to keep one's moral integrity, although the price was persecution or at least loss of creative public self-presentation. Their work, metaphorically or directly reflecting the raw nature of the post-war day-to-day and polemics with the new totalitarian thinking emerging soon became part of suppressed artistic tendencies, as it did not suit the idealization programmed by the thesis of socialist realism. I will show you some. It is the major work by Švec. Stalin Monument, and here are some examples of works by artists suppressed at the end of 50s. Here are works by Emil Fela from the last 2 years of his life. Emil Fela had to spend the whole war in the concentration camp from the first day of the war till the last day of the war. He had six heart attacks in the concentration camp. After, when he returned, he became a professor of the High School of Applied Art. But at the end of 40s, he had to quit his classes at the school, and his work of this kind was absolutely criticized by a committee who refused him to exhibit it on the occasion of his 70th anniversary, because this kind of works is very was not acceptable for the new program of the socialist realism. It was criticized by the bad construction of a figure, by the appropriation of a Chinese painting for Czech teams, by a wrong combination of the kind of costumes of figures and the countryside, which is from another region of Czechoslovakia, for example, North Bohemia and the man is from East Slovakia, for example. It was unacceptable. The figures were criticized, but a wrong modulation of parts of body and so on. And also he combined his paintings with popular songs, which are very, very, very balladic, very sad, and very metaphorical. So it was unacceptable. And he died. He died 2 years later. It is from 51. He died in 53. Karel Taige, who was working on his own work, he made a lot of collages. The collage on the right is his last collage from 51, and he died in 51 in a heart attack. He found it in the last year of his life. His last surrealist group with the youngest, partly with the youngest artists interested in surrealism, and partly with members of war groups, because war groups were finished their existence in 48, and some members refused to accept the new cultural ideology and were working with Taige in this group. His last collages are also very, very strong and very, very critical. And Jiří Kolář, for example, who spent 9 months in prison in 53 because of his of the manuscript of his famous book Prometheus Liver. The book was found in was not published, but it was found in 2-1 famous literary critic, literary scientist, and because in the book Collage name himself. He writes, it is me, Jiří Kolář, who write it. So it was possible to put him into the prison, and he had a big chance that he was not that he returned, because it was after Stalin and our president Gottwald died, and so the political situation was not so clear. Nobody knew what will happen. But they hadn't opportunity to present their work publicly. Other prestigious avant-garde artists, like the poet Vítězslav Nezval, caricaturist and writer Adolf Hofmeister, architect Jiří Kroha, as well as the important structuralist Jan Mukařovský, did not pay the ultimate price like Švec. But their temporary failures damaged their reputation so much that the consequences of their conjuncturalist and compromising attitudes realized through their avant-garde formal apparatus are discussed to this day. Their stories give testimony of humiliation of one's own personality in exchange for social success and a lucrative career. For example, Adolf Hofmeister, who was one of the founding members of avant-garde group De Wetzel, and in the beginning of 50s, he participated with Miroslav Galuška in such a strongly ideological print description of United Nations session. It is very exceptional that he had the opportunity to spend 3 months in United States in 51. And you see the kind of criticism he developed in his illustrations for the book. But what about his caricatures of the 50s? The style is the same as in the 20s. He didn't change. He used the same language, visual language, for the new themes. Jiří Kroha, very prominent architect. He started as an expressionist architect, and he was a very, very leftist artist during the between war time. And after, in the same time, he was a professor of architecture between the war. What is very exceptional for such a communist, such a important member of the communist party. And after the war, he continued in this way, and he accepted the new regime with the same apparatus as between wars. Here he participated in the preparation of spaces for important exhibitions at the end of 40s, exhibition Soviet Union, Our Friend, Our Brother, the 9th Convention of Czechoslovak Communist Party. He made many others. And here you see his between war social work, because really his belief into the communist future was very, very deep. It was not superficial, and so he developed in the beginning of 30s a very long series of collages of this sociological fragment of housing, where he compare the both opposite parts of the society, the poor worker class and the high society. Jiří Kroha at the beginning of the 50s developed also some architecture projects. I think one of the main was his project of Vorošilovo, Nová Dubnica, a new town in Slovakia built on the green grass, where he partly was working with a very interesting forms of architecture, but as other artists of the time, he adopted the necessity of the decoration and of the of these details, which were very very temporary, which were very related with the socialist realism. But here you see his architecture from 20s for the comparison, because this turn of ideology is really really very visible. Here is Vorošilovo as he projected it, but it was not accomplished in the whole. And Kroha was removed from the project in 55. Certainly, the situation after the death of after Stalin was dead became very very difficult, and this kind of large projects were became not so well accepted at the beginning of the 50s. Here another example. It was not an artist of the avant-garde. It was one bourgeois painter from the between the wars. But as other artists of this kind, he found his opportunity to become well known and to reach money by accepting the new regime. And Jan Čumpelík, the head of the collective Čumpelík Schoř Čermáková, is a author of the largest painting probably, I think, also in Union Soviet, they have not had not such a large canvas as this Thanksgiving of Czech and Slovak people to Generalissimus Stalin, because this painting had a fast 9 meters of height and 8 meters of large. And what is interesting, it is also related with this changement of politics, that this painting was exhibited one time in, I think, in 53, and it disappeared. And nobody knows where the painting is, if it exists, if it was destroyed. I hope, me personally, I hope all time that we will find it, that it exists somewhere rolled in a cave somewhere. But this hope is very very idealist, I think. And what is interesting too, this painting was so important, so unusual, but in the same time it was criticized in an official art magazine because it seemed not to be enough, the figures, that the figures are not enough Czech, for example, what is surprising. And but it was, I think it was such a kind of a friendly critic. It was not exposed. And what is also interesting, and but it is for a longer lecture, that this Čumpelík, who between wars painted not only bourgeois canvases, but also church paintings, used the same language for this thanksgiving to Stalin, because we could very, very easily put Stalin away and put there one other person as Christ or Saint, I don't know, Saint or some evangelist or someone, and it could be also possible. And here the second painting, also very large, it is a celebration of this communist cup, because it is related with this year 48 and with this. And also this painting was criticized because this comrade critic studied the faces of persons painted on the canvas, and it seemed that not each of them expresses enough the deepness of their belief in the future and of their strong position in this break, in this communist break. In contrast to this avant-garde artist related with the new regime, Schwarz had nothing to lose. Quite the contrary, he aimed for profit in both literal and figurative meaning. He was the only one to submit an ambitious design for Stalin's memorial as a large sculpture of a group, the leader accompanied by 8 figures. He won the competition and wrote a history again. However, he had no idea of the kind of history and circumstances. The technical as well as ideological problems associated with the execution of Schwarz's design are almost beyond imagination. Although there are countless documents, newspaper and magazine articles, etc., in the archives, those, together with testimonials of witnesses, inspired a number of studies and books. Europe's biggest Stalin monument, 16 meters tall, which together with the massive concrete sub-base weighing 17,000 tons, was following almost never-ending discussions between ideologists and conservation officers to be located on the slope above the Letná and of the Svatopluk Čech bridge with good visibility from multiple quarters of Prague. The construction went on from 52 till 55 and remains a document of great performance of many experts, particularly technical ones. Antonín Zápotocký, a trained stonemason who became president in 53, had an interesting interlude here as an expert consultant. The money involved, including personal fees, was astronomical for the time. Already when the monument, casually called the Monster, was under construction, a number of jokes came to life, as is the Czech self-preservation tradition. The sculpture group was called the Meat Line because a shortage of meat was a loyal sojourner of the communist state ideology everywhere at all time. Jan Werich called it the Jam. The workers growing up behind Stalin were labeled those who no longer fit in his ass. Letná, where the monument was situated, situated was unofficially nicknamed Aftas Veil, etc. The ultimately absurd factor on this devout megalomaniacal homage to the great Generalissimo was the simple fact that it was only completed 2 years after Stalin's death, at the time of growing doubt surrounding his cult, and no important representant of Soviet Union was present in the opening. And what about the main agent, the ambitious Otakar Švec? In course of the time, he was slowly losing his status of the main mover, ground by the ideological mechanism and mounting technical problems, which were hard to address and could not be foreseen at the beginning. He gradually stopped attending the studio where the individual parts of the statue were made, and the site itself too. His bosses, the communist ideologists, often tried to find to him in vain. If we exaggeratedly assigned them the metaphorical role of Mephistopheles, they could have asked Švec, why enter into fellowship with us if you can't not go through with it? Would through fly though who can't not cure they had of giddiness did we force ourselves on thee, or you thyself on us? Stalin's monument was unveiled after many postponements on May the 1st, 55. In the absence of Otakar Švec, who decided to stop his time forever almost a month before. In contrast to Faust's, his last moment was not beautiful. 7 years later, Stalin monument was blasted. The communist leaders decided to demolish it a year after removing Stalin's body from the Red Square mausoleum, a deadline set for celebrating the 45th anniversary of the Great Socialist Revolution. Let us add that since 1991, its stand has been occupied by the metronome by Vratislav Karel Novák, one of Prague's best public sculptures. Here is Stalin with model of this statue. Here is the demolition of the monument, which was very complicated. And here is the metronome of Vratislav Karel Novák, which moves and symbolize the oscillation between the political right and left. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this presentation. And actually, I'm not surprised that the largest monuments to Stalin, they were completed 2 years after his death. That's the case of Poland, and the completion of the Palace of Culture also took place in 1955. So since this session is about the problem of time and periodization, we may also talk about this problem of the problems, or the works of art or the works of architecture, which are completed too late to be a true commemoralization of Stalin in this case.